This podcast is presented by University of California Television. For more information about this program or UCTV, visit us online at www.uctv.tv. Enjoy the presentation.
Today on CNS News, we'll meet some veterans facing new battles back home. Get the latest on California's same-sex marriage debate. Go around the world with local insights on international issues. And to look at military men in pleated skirts, you gotta see it to believe it.
Good morning and welcome to CNS News. I'm Lauren Retzer.
And I'm Lucy Schwartz. First, we take a look at stories that made recent headlines in local and national news. Kosovo declared independence from Serbia last month. The U.S. is supporting the move, but it's been controversial. And McCott reports on reactions in the Bay Area.
Kosovo is Serbia! Kosovo!
Emotions ran high last month when roughly 50 Bay Area Serbs gathered on Market Street to protest what they say is Kosovo's illegal independence.
Question is, do we need to recognize every single separatist ethnic movement in the world?
They say U.S. support of Kosovo's independence violates a 1999 U.N. resolution defining Kosovo as a province of Serbia. But Professor Norman Neymark says that the U.N. violation is a technicality. He says long-suffering Albanians have earned the right to a homeland.
The Serbs need to recall that there was a terrible campaign of ethnic cleansing, which drove more than a million Kosovar Albanians out of the country.
He adds that Kosovo is over 90% Albanian, and the Serbian government has ruled the region under martial law for almost two decades.
They have never had independence as an entity.
But the protesters claim that nothing less than American honor is at stake.
America, wake up. This is your defense as much as it is Serbia's. Živela Serbia, živela Kosovo, and long live real American patriotic values.
But Neymark doesn't buy that.
People in the streets of Kosovo are waving the American flag. Where else are they waving the American flag? It's one of the moments I think the United States can be proud of.
For CNS News, this is Emma Cott reporting.
Back in the Bay Area, it's been 4 years since the city of San Francisco and some of its gay couples sued the state over the legality of same-sex marriage. Last week, Lucy and I went down to the state Supreme Court to hear both sides of the argument.
My name is Dave Chandler, and one day I'm going to say this is my husband, Jeff Chandler.
That's right.
Yay. Dave and Jeff are one of 20 same-sex couples who are suing the state of California. They claim the current legal definition of marriage, one man and one woman, violates the Equal Protection Clause of the state constitution.
The California Constitution protects the right to privacy, and encompassed within that right to privacy is the right to marry the person of one's choice.
The journey to the Supreme Court began 4 years ago when San Francisco Mayor Gavin Newsom authorized roughly 4,000 marriage licenses for same-sex couples.
I do.
But the state court quickly nullified those marriages. Soon after, a total of 6 lawsuits were filed on both sides of the argument.
23 years we've been together, and we wanted this day to come.
On the day of the hearing, passionate supporters from both sides faced off outside the courthouse.
God condemns homosexuality. And we're here to show it to them, warn them.
A moral wrong cannot be a civil right. It's not possible.
Opponents of same-sex marriage say California voters have already decided the issue.
In 2000, 61% of the California voters voted to retain the definition of marriage as a union of a man and a woman. If there are good arguments for changing marriage, that's something that should happen through the democratic process, not through the courts.
But same-sex marriage supporters cite the state constitution. 60 years ago, the state courts legalized interracial marriage. It was a ruling that said, within limits, you can marry whoever you wish.
The African-American community really struggled for many, many, many years to get a Supreme Court ruling about who they could marry. I think the hope is that the same thing will happen on this issue.
Same-sex couples argue they deserve the same equality and that domestic partnership just doesn't cut it. They want more.
We know in this country, separate never means equal. And we also know that justice delayed is justice denied.
The justices have roughly 80 days left to make their ruling. This is Lauren Rutzer for CNS News.
You might be surprised to know that a third of the people living in Oakland say the city's too expensive for them. Annabelle Peavy reports on Ron Dellum's controversial plan to curb the rising cost of housing.
This three-bedroom house in West Oakland is home to Eve Purvis, an elementary school counselor. Purvis lives here with her four children and her new husband.
It is extremely hard to have a large family to be in a three-bedroom, one-bath house.
Federal guidelines say affordable housing should eat up no more than 30% of a total income. But Purvis pays much more than that, with a rent of almost $2,000 a month.
I live approximately four blocks from International Boulevard, which has been riddled with crime and prostitution and drugs. And it's almost like a battle to stay here to work and live in Oakland.
Purvis's situation could change if Oakland City Council passes Mayor Ron Dellum's proposal for affordable housing.
The people who live in Oakland should be able to stay in Oakland.
Housing activists and community members met recently to voice their concerns. Pastor Lucy Colin says the housing crunch has affected her congregation.
We've lost in 2 years 12 households, 12 families, people who do many of the jobs that Oakland depends on are the very people that are hurting.
Dellum's plan requires developers who build 20 or more units to sell 15% of those at an affordable rate. Yet some say the plan just isn't enough.
Even if it does get built, really what we're talking about is a few units for a few select lottery winners in Oakland.
Developer Carlos Plazola says the mayor's plan will curb economic growth.
You're not going to punish someone into building housing. What you have to do is encourage people to build.
With four council members in favor and four against, the proposal's been stuck for years. But at the meeting, Henry Chang pledged to vote yes and break the tie, once the plan is back on the council agenda. In the meantime, Purvis is waiting.
5 years from now, I would love to be able to see my mother, my sister, and most importantly, all of us living someplace that we can call our own. That's real important. That's a real important thing, to have a place that you can call home.
For CNS News, this is Annabelle Peavy.
You've heard about all the hot spots around the world. CNS sat down with some people who could give us an opinion about tensions in their own countries. First, we take you to Kenya, where last year's presidential election triggered deadly riots and ethnic rivalry.
I remember, you know, watching the count after the polls on the 27th, and then you have the opposition leader ahead by almost a million votes, and then that vote starts shrinking overnight, and all of a sudden, Mwai Kibaki is declared the winner. And I started going, oh no, things are gonna go bad. Now, if you look at the cycle of tribal violence, it comes always on the election year. To avoid the situation in the future, I think what we need to do is these two leaders need to talk about what led to the killing of those people, because tribe was not the reason. The reason was incitement from politicians. I have to have hope. I do have hope, but as a journalist, I have to be skeptical.
Back in the Bay Area, when you think of guardian angels, you usually think of pure white-winged creatures looking over your shoulder, right? Well, in Oakland, they wear red berets and jackets. Brittany Johnson hit the streets in search of a few real-life angels.
Yeah!
These men and women are willing to risk their lives as volunteer crime stoppers. They're members of the Guardian Angels. Curtis Lee was started the group believing that people should work to make their community safe.
The people themselves need to see that you can do more than just retreat behind bars on the windows, locks on the doors, or carrying guns or protecting your own. That you really have to go out into the streets. You really have to make a difference.
The Angels hope their red berets and sateen jackets will serve as visual deterrents to crime in Oakland, a city where violence is overwhelming the understaffed police force.
Well, the Oakland Police Department is one of the departments that is 100% supportive of any group of citizens that are willing to step up and do something about the crime in our city.
Oakland is the fourth most dangerous city in the country. But that doesn't bother Robin West. She says she took from the community during her 19 years of substance abuse. And now that she's clean, she takes pride in giving back as a guardian angel.
I have changed my life around. You know, I found God, I found the guardian angels. So I have a real motivation to go out there and make the streets a little bit safer.
To protect citizens, they patrol some of Oakland's toughest neighborhoods.
Oh!
carrying only first aid kits, flashlights, and handcuffs. To protect themselves, the Angels learn martial arts. Their bodies are their weapons. In Oakland, I'm Brittany Johnson for CNS News.
Another way to fight crime is to keep the number of repeat offenders down. Lauren, did you know that 1 in 100 American adults is in prison?
No way.
That's more than in any other country. And once they get out of jail, the biggest challenge for some is staying out. Jenny Chu tells a story of people trying to do just that.
At this mandatory meeting, parolees just out of prison can find services ranging from free haircuts to finding a job.
Who in here want a job?
Kevin Grant says agencies and service groups need to band together to help parolees stay out of jail.
What has finally happened is someone on high has said, hey, well, let's cluster them all together and get these programs to completely embrace the loved ones as they come home and wrap the services around them in totality.
70% of the state's convicts eventually return to jail, making California's recidivism rate the highest in the nation. Herbert Hustson spent 16 years in and out of prison.
After getting out the last time, I said to myself, I'm getting too old for this. What really scared me is like three strikes. So basically, in the event that I catch another felon, I would spend natural life in prison according to the new laws.
A year ago, Herbert, who was homeless and unemployed, attended Pam Hogan's employment workshop.
Is that life behind him?
Right.
Am I taking a chance on him?
It's a public safety issue to make sure that we get this right. We use the term recidivism. What it really means is someone is reoffending. Someone is hurting someone again, stealing again, whatever it is.
Since attending the workshop, Herbert found two jobs and a place to live.
I'm basically remembering all the things that she taught me during the class. And basically all those things I'm using to stay in the jobs that I'm in. And it's actually working.
He was so earnest. He wanted it so bad. He was just ready to get his life together. And he was hitting one wall after another.
Herbert still faces barriers. He uses a pseudonym to hide his record. He lost one job but found another. And Pam says the shadow of prejudice makes life on the outside difficult.
If you walked down the street and you saw a sign that said help wanted, blacks need not apply. Need I say more? That's exactly what's going on now with the discrimination against these individuals with the record. But one
day, luckily, Herbert has the praise of his church.
And now he has a job, a legal job.
And this support may be just what he needs to keep his life on track. This is Jenny Chu for CNS News.
Now we meet a Bay Area entrepreneur who visited her native Pakistan last month to report on the country's first general elections in 6 years. But it's in the turbulent regions bordering Afghanistan that she made her most interesting discovery.
My trip to Peshawar was the most eye-opening experience. Even within Pakistan, people in Lahore, Karachi, all this think that that's like a terrorist area, unsafe to go, even though it's not. There was no suicide bombing prior to 9/11 in that area at all. So now you think of all these militants running around all this. You know, there were none. It's something that's a recent phenomena. It's that they feel it's the U.S. policies that are creating all that militancy in that area, which to me was astonishing. And what I really learned was that those people are the ones that are most deprived. All they want is economic development. They have no rights. And then for them to say, okay, let's join this organization, at least they can put food on the table. So that's the real story that needs to come out of that area.
Welcome back to California. Lucy, what would you say if I told you that you could help save the environment without spending another dollar on energy?
How would I do that?
Here's the answer. There's a grassroots movement promoting a new way to bypass PG&E. But as Jordan Ehrlich reports, as the movement grows, so does the opposition.
At this popular Oakland farmers market,
do you have a minute for a clean energy petition?
Activists aren't interested in peddling fruits and vegetables. Their mission is to save the planet.
We don't have a whole lot of time to avoid the worst effects of global warming.
The Sierra Club and eight other organizations want East Bay residents to buy into a new way of getting their electricity. It's called CCA, or Community Choice Aggregation. And instead of paying PG&E, residents would allow the city to buy electricity directly from clean energy providers. And that means electricity generated by wind or the sun.
Most people probably would be really interested and really happy to know they're able to get clean, renewable power without having to fork over $30,000 for solar panels.
Johnson says it's a no-brainer. Community Choice Energy uses the same power grid as PG&E, and it won't cost consumers any more.
You kind of switch over, and life goes on.
And for business owner Chris Waters, electricity without all the pollutants that cause environmental hazards is well worth making the switch.
A lot of the things that we do, we don't necessarily do because it saves us money.
Waters pays roughly $7,200 a year to PG&E to run his Oakland Cafe, where customers can find low-flowing toilets, which saves water, as well as energy-efficient heating.
We're more focused on ideas and philosophies and movements.
And while mindful consumers like Waters don't mind a little sacrifice, PG&E isn't ready to give up revenue without a little pushback.
They can't say publicly that they're against energy efficiency and solar. And on record, they support community choice aggregation. And so what they're doing is attacking any specific effort to implement.
Fenn says that even though PG&E is mandated by law not to interfere or oppose community energy, they've been subtly making their displeasure known. In 2007, just before San Francisco unanimously passed its own community choice initiative, PG&E sent out this press release criticizing the plan, saying it was unworkable and gave false promises. But Fenn, who has had a hand in writing the community choice law in six states, hopes that Oakland will go the way of Cleveland, where 7 years after adopting their own community choice plan, the city has saved taxpayers $29 million, a goal activists in the East Bay hope to achieve. Jordan Ehrlich, CNS News.
You know, Lucy, I really wanted to fly home this weekend, but it was just too expensive. And sometimes all the hassle at the airport just isn't worth it.
Well, did you check out Virgin America Airlines? Gabriel Lee just did a story about how they're trying to reinvent the way people fly.
You know, I have, but I heard they've recently hit some turbulence.
Well, let's take a look.
On Valentine's Day, employees of Virgin America took to the streets of San Francisco, guerrilla marketing style, to raise the profile of their seven-month-old airline. But then again, with bargain basement fares and first-class service, Virgin isn't your average airline.
We're trying to do something that's never been done in the U.S. before, which is to create really a specialty product that is high-end, but still low-cost.
Henry Hardevelt, principal airline analyst at Forrester Research, says Virgin has hit a consumer sweet spot.
The caliber of product they offer and the value they provide is quite compelling. What Virgin America is doing is they're bringing the experience back into flying. They've got in-seat video, they have live TV, they have movies, they have 3,000 MP3s.
But economic recession and high oil prices are threatening the low-cost airline model. Virgin America is entering into a market saturated with low-priced seats such as those offered by competitors JetBlue and Southwest. Both those airlines also started flying to San Francisco last year. And Hardevelt questions whether a startup airline stands a chance in the current market.
If Virgin America isn't nervous, then they need to replace those executives with executives who are nervous.
Well, we're nervous, but we're also optimistic.
Yesterday, oil hit $111 per barrel. Virgin's A320 jets hold approximately 5,250 gallons of gas, which at $3 a gallon means over $15,000 for a full tank. Sustaining low fares with those energy costs may not be possible.
This summer, it's very likely you're going to see higher fares in order to pay for the oil.
With close to 20 low-cost airlines operating in the U.S., some question whether those low fares come at a price. This week, the FAA fined the leading low-cost airline Southwest a record $10.2 million for failing to perform required maintenance checks on a number of aircraft. Southwest pulled 43 of their aircraft for further inspection as a result. Hardevelt says the Southwest incident is no reason for concern and that demand for low-cost airlines in the U.S. is only going to grow.
I think it's going to be really interesting to see what happens. If Virgin America executes on its plan in the right way, if Virgin America sticks to its knitting, I think that they could be poised to be a very large airline, not just here in San Francisco, but in the, you know, across the U.S.
This is Gabriel Lee for CNS News.
For our next World Viewpoint, we take you to Burma, where last fall Buddhist monks took to the streets in silent protest of the military government. Many fear repercussions if they speak out, but we were able to talk to a teacher who was there in 1988 when the current regime took power.
I'm the pastor of the current fellowship. When I'm 88, it's happened. I was a teacher. The government, they want to catch the children to what they want to put in the jail. all the students is like our son and daughter. I do not want them to hurt. That's why I call them and I put them in my house. I keep them safe. That's why the next day when I go back to my job, to the school, they let me go from my job. They let me forced to retire. But I never give up because I love my student, like my son and my daughter, because in our country it's like that.
Speaking of courage, more and more U.S. soldiers are coming home from war with what they call the signature wound of Iraq. Molly Snyder-Fink visits the wounded warriors who are trying to ride their way to recovery.
Come on in!
These injured Iraq War veterans are about to cycle their lives forward. It's the West Coast launch of Soldier Ride, a bike tour that will give injured veterans the chance to become active again.
It feels kind of good. It does. Doing something. Better than just sitting there all day. Getting therapy.
Good morning, everyone.
30 soldiers are taking part in this ride. Ryan Kelly is a 3-time vet of Soldier Ride.
For a lot of the guys out on this ride today, this might be their first big physical endeavor. And what we hope to inspire the soldiers and wounded warriors that are taking part in this event to do is to reach beyond the goals that they might have set today and see that they can do just about anything they want.
Veterans with physical injuries need special bikes like this one. But less obvious are people whose disabilities are unseen. Veterans with traumatic brain injuries. Reports from the Pentagon say that 31% of soldiers evacuated from battle have brain injuries.
They have difficulty accessing and then articulating what they need to say.
Short-term memory loss is also an issue. And, Susan says,
because of the blast injuries, there's multiple muscular skeletal injuries.
I damaged the right side of my brain, which controls the left side of the body. So I have weakness of the whole left side of the body.
Scott Thorne is another veteran with a brain injury. He's partially blind and rides with a partner to compensate.
Well, hopefully we hope to gain some more independence for Scott. Always each event that we go to gains a little bit more.
Scott was on foot patrol in Mosul, Iraq, when gunmen opened fire and a bullet embedded itself in his brain. That was 2004. After extensive therapy, he's in his final round of treatment at the VA center in Palo Alto.
It's quite a joy to be able to see him back in the public again.
Hey, Mom.
Bye, guy.
Bye. Scott and the riders will go for 6 days, ending in San Diego. They'll have support vehicles and therapists with them the entire time.
It's a good little ride. See how far I can go.
They're going to look at it as their disability, but we're going to look at it as look at the progress. You know, several months ago you were laying in a bed. You almost died. Next year you'll be out here leading the race.
This is Molly Snyder-Fink for CNS News.
Now let's look at another kind of therapy. Every year, 50,000 Americans are diagnosed with Parkinson's disease. There's no cure, but doctors and patients are singing a new tune when it comes to treatment. Kieran Goldman tells the story.
Heather McTavish isn't just singing for fun. She's singing because it helps her with her Parkinson's symptoms.
I wrote the song when I was sitting in a circle of women, and I knew that I was disappearing, and I didn't know how I was going to drive home or even how I was going to communicate that I had a problem. And then the woman who was sitting beside me noticed that, and she picked up the drum and started drumming. And before I knew what was happening, my butt started twitching to this, you know, to this rhythm. And so I picked up my drum and started drumming. And then I put down my drum and got into the middle of the circle and I danced.
In people with Parkinson's disease like Heather, there is a considerable drop of dopamine, a brain chemical vital to coordination and movement. Brain scans show that music can actually stimulate production of dopamine.
Blue moon. Now I'm no longer alone.
Once considered an unconventional treatment, now more and more doctors prescribe music and send Parkinson's patients to music therapists like Kathy Quain.
There's different qualities within music that make it therapeutic. Music with a very steady pulse can be very comforting to someone. Just simply feeling a steady beat So it's one note right after another. You know exactly when the next note is going to be. And I think for someone with Parkinson's disease, not only does it provide kind of an emotional feeling of, oh, I feel safe now, you know, with this very steady music, but that something must happen in how the brain interprets the music that gives some momentum to whatever movement needs to happen.
Music isn't going to replace the most common treatments for Parkinson's, like drugs and surgery, but it is more and more an accepted way to help people, like Heather McTavish, enhance their daily lives.
That's the music experience. That's being able to dance when you can't walk and sing when you can't talk.
This is Kieran Goldman for CNS News.
And now there's more music coming your way, straight from Scotland. Our military expert Joe Bush visits a group of soldiers in skirts who are climbing up the British pop charts.
The Royal Scot Dragoon Guards are touring the U.S. to promote their new album, Spirit of the Glen. The album surged to number 13 in the British pop charts, making bagpiping popular and profitable.
Knowing inspiring, and people have listened to the music, and bagpipe music is inspiring.
The unit has signed a £1 million contract with Universal Records. But these men are more than musicians. They're soldiers, too. And whether they join to play or fight, they all train on Challenger 2 tanks. And many are combat veterans.
All the pipes and drums would serve on operations. So when we're tasked as a regiment with the British Army to go to Iraq or Kosovo or Bosnia or Northern Ireland, we would deploy as any other soldier would. I've served 3 times in Iraq, also 2 times in Kosovo, and I've been to Bosnia as well.
The pipe major offered to give me a private lesson in piping. Quickly learned it takes a strong set of lungs to play the pipes.
So as you say there, it does take a lot of technique, and you will get lightheaded.
Before leaving, I had to ask one final question.
So what are you wearing under there?
It's a trade secret that a Scotsman will never reveal.
Maybe some things are better left unknown. In San Rafael, Joe Bush, CNS News.
What do you think they're really wearing underneath their kilts?
Maybe nothing.
Could be. That's it for today. Thanks for joining us. I'm Lucy Schwartz.
And I'm Lauren Retzer. We'll see you next time on CNS News.
You've been listening to a podcast from University of California Television. For more information about this program or UCTV, visit us online at www.uctv.tv. Thank you for listening.